This episode is part of our ongoing series with Queen's University Belfast, where we have the chance to sit down with an interesting student, professor, or graduate once a month to hear and share their story. To find out more and see the other episodes as part of this series, please visit bestofbelfast.org/Queens. Thanks so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this week's conversation.
I remember showing my grandmother my Barbie flash-up trainers.
I mean, how sweet do you feel with the light-up shoes? It's
class.
Next level.
I just thought they were unreal. I thought I was the coolest kid in Port Stewart. Class. I was, like, but I just, at that moment, I especially felt like it.
Is that where you were born and bred?
Mm-hmm.
Unreal.
Yeah.
So this is my ignorant question. Like, Francesca Morelli, like, are you connected to, like, Morelli's?
Yes, it's my family.
Because I've always known you as Fran.
Uh-huh.
Right? And Fran's fine. Like, we all know Fran's. But then I was like, I've never met, like, a Francesca, especially in Northern Ireland. And then I was like, Francesca Morelli? I mean, like, there's a lot of, like, kind of, like, bells going off in my head whenever I saw that. So, like, please, like, I'm so excited that that's actually the case. Like, tell me a little bit of your family history, because that is so fun.
Well, do you know what's actually really fun? And I love that you asked me that, because growing up, I was always, like, Francesca Morelli, like, of the ice cream, like, the ice cream girl I was referred to a couple of times. So I love now that I'm in Belfast and I'm actually my own person. Like, so many people don't know this about me.
You have a secret. You have a secret identity.
I do feel like it's a secret identity because everyone has sort of growing up known me as that. But now moving to Belfast, I feel like I've nearly, like, created my own name for myself, which is something I'm a wee bit proud of. Like, people know me for, you know, business and startup and influencers and different things. And I'm like, wow, I'm actually not the ice cream girl anymore. Yeah. And people are really surprised when I tell them that I'm related to the ice cream people. And they're like, oh my God, wow, like, I never knew that. And I'm like, class.
But that's so important for you. Like I'm really interested in, like, the children of, like, dynasties. Like, if that makes sense, where it's like people who've, like, come from a background of big business or whatever. And it's like, there is that desire to, like, forge your own path. And that's so important because, like, that's what all of us need to do. And you have had certain challenges that I haven't experienced coming from that amazing kind of heritage, if you put it that way.
Yeah, I know what you mean in terms of forging your own path. And I'm very lucky that my family never put any pressure on me to kind of take it over. But I feel so privileged and lucky to have that option. It's not a decision I have to make just yet, but it will be in the future. And I do feel like that's a choice I'm just so privileged to have. And I am very proud of my family history. Yeah. And it is something I do talk about quite often. I am so lucky to have a rich heritage and have grown up with a lot of stories regarding the war and, you know, setting up of the business. I mean, our family business is now 110 years old.
My goodness.
It was set up in 1911.
You think about what's happened between 1911 and now.
Insane. So the stories I've heard and the stories I've grown up with have been incredible, so much so that there was even a documentary made about our family story called The Morelli Family Portrait.
Oh, my days.
So I talk about that quite often.
Where is that? Like, where can we consume the crap out of that?
So it was on the BBC, but now I suppose the easiest way to access it is probably just YouTube. Yeah. So if you type in The Morelli Family Portrait, it does come up on YouTube.
So cool.
I suppose to give you a bit of background on it, just before 1911, my great uncle Peter came over to Northern Ireland from Italy.
Wow.
My family is from a very rural agricultural little village in the Lazio region called Casalattico. So around the turn of the century, a lot of that village emigrated over to Ireland, and about 70% went to the south of Ireland and started up chippers, and about 30% went to the north and started up ice cream shops.
Amazing.
So if you ever go to Dublin, if you look around you, you'll see lots of Italian chip shops under the names of Macari, Borza, Cafola. And then if you come to the north, you'll see Morelli's ice cream, you'll see Fusco's ice cream.
That's right.
So we are from those generations, and actually every year for my entire life I've gone back to that village along with all of us other kids, you know, and we all have been since we were younger, and we've all grown up together, and we are all, you know, third, fourth generation of the chipper or the ice cream families. And it's funny, I remember last year all the ones my age were all sort of making the decisions now, well, you're going into the family business, and in my case it'll be ice cream, in their case, you know, the family chip shops. So Yes, he came over here and actually set up a chip shop first in Coleraine and then set up an ice cream shop in Port Stewart. And in that stage, he had actually said to my great-grandfather about coming over. So my great-grandfather then did the late Andrew Morelli, and he went into business in the Port Stewart ice cream shop. Sometime later then, he actually asked his childhood sweetheart, Anastasia, to come and join him.
That story.
Anastasia, whose ring I'm actually currently wearing. But she wore it actually with the jewel facing on the inside of her palm, because it's such a privilege that they came from that she was a bit mortified to be wearing this on the outside.
So they just see the bangle as such,
Yeah, it was sort of the first nice thing I suppose she'd had. So what happened was they came over and they had set up this business, but then the war broke out and my great-grandfather actually was interned as a prisoner of war in the Isle of Man.
What?
So he was taken away and he actually spent some time in the Crumlin Road jail.
What?
Before being interned in the Isle of Man, yeah.
And is that just like, oh, he's not from here, he's suspicious?
Yes, it was because he was an Italian living in Ireland at the time.
Crazy.
And they were worried that he'd be sharing information. So along with other Italians, he was interned in the Isle of Man. Meanwhile, my grandfather had gone over to spend some time with his grandmother, with his brother in our village in Italy. But at that time, war broke out and the family was actually split up. Oof. And him and his brother, late Corrado Morelli, were lost actually in Italy for 2 years, age 7 and 9.
Oh my God.
And they tell amazing stories about like bombs flying overhead and being behind like, you know, a lorry that 5 minutes later exploded, you know, mad stories like that. And it's because we were actually based very close to Monte Cassino. It's it was a very prominent casino, I suppose, as a town was very prominent at the time in the kind of war in general. And my great-grandfather's house was actually occupied by the Germans and taken over as their headquarters, which is mad. He came back and all the stuff was gone. But basically, he was interned in the Isle of Man. My grandfather and his brother were lost in Italy as young boys. And my great-grandmother, Anastasia, was at home running the shop with her youngest son, Guido, not a word of English. And it's actually because of her that the business is still a success today, because she was such an amazing woman and such a hard worker and worked so hard. And by the time that the family was reunited, the business was a success. It's actually a really interesting turn of events, the way the family was reunited. When all the kids and stuff were being gathered up in Italy and trying to be, you know, relocated back to their homes, my grandfather and his brother were standing in a queue, and soldiers were trying to delegate them into kind of different areas and trying to work out where they're meant to go. And this particular soldier looked down the list and saw Corrado and Nino Morelli. And he looked up and saw they were going to Ireland. He said, "Are you two from Port Stewart?" And they were like, yeah. And it turns out the soldier was from Coleraine.
Oh my God.
And said, "Right, come you with me," and was able to get them in the right place at the right time then to get them back. And funny, recently the anniversary of the Andorra Star has just passed. So the Andorra Star is a ship that was returning a lot of the prisoners back to home. But there were two ships. And Angelo Morelli is a very, very common name in Italy, as is Francesca Morelli. Turns out Angelo Morelli got mixed up with another Angelo Morelli and had to change ships last minute. The Andorra Star sank.
Oh.
And actually hundreds and hundreds were killed.
Whoa.
But because of a last minute switch, my great-grandfather made it back to be reunited in Port Stewart with his wife Anastasia and his two sons.
I mean, forget the documentary. Like, where is Spielberg that we were talking about before Roland? Like, that is crazy.
Yeah, I suppose that's why I'm here. Because he made it onto the other ship.
I mean, like, and then, like, I'm sure there's way... Because then, like, you settle down for a couple of years and then, oh, surprise, here's another world war. You know, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm,
the amount of history that your family has seen is remarkable. And the fact that they're here in Northern Ireland is so amazing.
Do you know what? This is really funny. Just to interrupt, my great-grandfather brought the first espresso to Northern Ireland.
No, he didn't.
He did. And, you know, my grandfather always tells that story. And I'm like, okay, we really need to, like, market this more.
Yeah. Like, push ice cream to the side here. Like, it's this espresso. We need to really hit hard here. Wow.
Yeah, brought the first espresso coffee to Northern Ireland.
You know, Northern Ireland's so funny. Like, I guess, like, you know, we're talking about 100 years, so it's a long period of time. But, like, my granny, who's not particularly old, you know, she's in her 70s. like she talks to me about like when she remembers like pasta coming to Northern Ireland.
Wow.
Or like the first time she had pizza and she's like 30 years old. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, I just can't imagine a world like that where, you know, you were just being introduced to all this stuff that we've grown up and obviously have just like taken for granted.
It's funny, actually, my great grandmother used to make her own like homemade pasta sauce, obviously. But when she was in Northern Ireland, she discovered chicken stock. And you can't get it over in Italy. So she used to say to my mum, Elena, bring me chicken soup, so she can put it in her sauce because she can't get it there. You used to be able to not get it there. So my mum used to have to bring her loads and loads of chicken stock every time she went back.
That's class. I was speaking to someone yesterday and they, like a lot of people here, were brought up on like a farming background. And she also was talking about like that kind of pressure of like the family business, but also like the benefits of like being exposed to like entrepreneurial stuff at a young age. Like, what is your lived experience of that? Like, did you have like a unique insight into business in comparison to like me? My dad worked for the railway and my mom was a nurse. Do you know what I mean? It's like, there's no business in my family whatsoever. Like, you tell me about like being a part of that growing up.
Well, obviously for me, it was all just very normal. But, you know, my parents just worked all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was nonstop. And especially in a catering and hospitality business, you really just do have to be there all the time. I mean, my dad's only real day off is Christmas Day when the shop's closed. And that's the only day we close.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I suppose that's really the thing that stands out is just that, you know, I was raised by childminders to some extent, you know. I don't want to say that, that's kind of unfair, but no, I was around childminders a lot, and you know, mom and dad just had to work and that was that. And I suppose I grew up really learning the value of money, and it was really important to me, you know, anything that we wanted, we were told, you know, okay, well, when can you work? You know, when do you want to put on the rota? So we all grew up working in the family business, and I suppose that was really valuable to us, you know, learning how to work in a business and working in catering and, you know, all those skills that you learn from those jobs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hospitality jobs are like a baptism of fire for people. I feel like
they are, yeah.
I say this all the time on the show, everybody needs to work in hospitality from a young age. Like, it's such a gift in the end, you know?
Yeah, it is. And we all did. And, you know, my brother and my sister still do. So, yeah, I mean, it was funny because I actually spent some time in Paris when I was in uni in my third year. I spent a year there. And again, I was working in a very entrepreneurial setting, but it was so different to what I'd known growing up because it was in the startup world. And that's kind of how I got involved in startups, because I couldn't understand how we were all working every day, but no one was actually making any money.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because for me, growing up in a catering hospitality background, we made a scone for 20p, we sold it for 150, and you got your profit, and that was how you paid your staff. Whereas working in a tech startup, I was completely baffled. I was like, hold on, when are we going to start making money here? Or like, what is going on?
And the fact that, like, as you said, like in most businesses today, there's no actual physical product that you can see and touch and like sell.
Yeah, so it just shows you how much the world has come on.
It's just like in the air, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
very much
podcast,
so.
It's like, what you see on this table right now is my entire business. Like, I have a laptop, I have a recorder, and I have two microphones. That is literally it.
Mm-hmm. And it just shows you how much business has changed over
the
years.
That's so wild.
So I suppose that was kind of an eye-opening for me as well, growing up in a family business and seeing how business can take different forms.
True. Traditional versus kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, modern or tech oriented, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How long were you in Paris for?
I was in Paris for a year.
A year? Now, that's a good chunk.
Yeah, it was a good chunk.
Where's
and
your mum from?
It was quite formative, actually. My mum's from Whitehead.
Perfect. I needed to know. I just, it was in my head. I was like, it's going to like annoy me like a fly if I don't get this out of my system.
Yeah, so, my mum's a nurse from Whitehead.
Love it. You had a unique opportunity to kind of like experience what your family experience of going to a new place, being by yourself. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but probably experiencing the loneliness of a new place as well, and the language and everything. So give me your Paris story and give me the Instagram versus reality as well. I'm sure there was great moments, but I'm sure there was hard moments too.
Oh, it's so interesting you say that, because I suppose going through uni and in like first and second year, everybody talked about the big placement year, the big Erasmus year. They got students international business with French.
Awesome.
So,
oh, you got the language.
I do have the language,
that's
yeah.
Gorgeous.
So,
you speak Italian?
Yes, not as well as I should, but yes, ish.
Cool.
French probably better, but yeah. So they had, you know, in uni they brought in students that had just come back and they were telling us all about how amazing Erasmus was and so class and you're going to absolutely love it and all, completely telling the story with rose tinted glasses on, you know, hindsight.
Here's 1% of the story.
Oh my goodness. They brought, it's
the
amazing.
Croissants, oh my goodness. Oh,
they were
the
all
river.
Just, they were all really nostalgic and they were telling us this amazing version of the last year that they had just had, which I suppose everyone kind of would, but.
Sure.
I went away anyway and spent the first 2 months absolutely hating life. I was so tired. Like, if you think about uni life in comparison to going into 9 to 5, which I was doing at the time.
And our startup, you were probably pulling 60 hours.
Oh, my goodness. I was just doing so much and learning so quickly and it was all a bit overwhelming. And I was going out with someone at home at the time, which was hard. And it was a big, massive city. You can imagine Port Stewart to Paris. There's quite the difference. So I was like, what the hell? And so I remember just one day getting so sick of it. And I wrote a blog and put it on my Facebook and just said, you know, this isn't climbing up the Eiffel Tower and eating baguettes every day. This is really difficult. And I'm so tired. Mm. And I was flooded with messages from my uni mates being like, oh my God, Francesca, I'm so glad someone said it.
Yeah.
We are experiencing exactly the same thing. This is so hard and we're so tired. And I remember thinking, thank God your pictures are all a load of rubbish. You're all struggling just as much as I am. And I remember one of my friends actually talked about it recently. She said, I remember Fran put up a blog just about how tired she was and I was so glad she did. And it was one of those moments I was just like, you know, this is not all it cracked up to be. Now, I must say that that year made me so much more resilient and I feel like I can get through anything now. You know, Port Stewart to Paris is quite a jump, but I do feel like I learned so much and I am a lot thicker skinned for it.
Yeah. So what did you actually do when you were in Paris?
So I worked for a startup studio, and a startup studio is a fairly uncommon model, but essentially
I haven't heard of it.
There is it hasn't really hit here yet particularly, but it's essentially where there's one key kind of investor and he works alongside a handful of entrepreneurs on their respective businesses. So it means they all pool resources. So one day I might have been working on...
smart.
It is smart, and it means that there's more of a community because, as you know, entrepreneurship can be quite isolating. But they were all in the same office with the same staff, with the same pot of money, with the same partner.
Literally, like, I saw this happen, like, through the glass here in the studio, like, out there in Ormo Pass. Like, the co-working space is so powerful because someone literally held up, like, a logo on their screen that they were designing, and I saw them, like, mouth the words... is this naff looking? And just like that chance to like get like real time feedback from somebody is just so great.
Totally. So that was a really valuable experience. I was working for 3 different startups, and while it was really fast paced and hard, it was so rewarding. For fear of sounding really millennial, when I went to that startup, one of the platforms I was working on, it had 2,000 users, and by the time I left, it had 10,000. And I was really glad to see the impact of my work because it was such a hard year, but it was extremely challenging, and I think that's when I really got the bug for startup life.
Wow. So, like, is that when you got bitten, you would say?
I think so. I mean, it was really weird for me when I first went because they were all tech startups.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of thinking how different traditional business was. I was used to the whole background of I make a scone for 20p, I sell it for 150 and my profit is therefore 1.30 and I put that in my pocket and I pay my staff. Whereas I remember being in that startup studio in Paris and thinking, hold on, this isn't making any money. Why are we doing it?
Yeah.
Not understanding that it was a build for acquisition model.
Mm-hmm.
And that now is what, you know, we're used to sitting here in Ormo Pass and seeing a lot of startups trying to achieve the same thing. But I remember just thinking, wow, this is so different. But really learning about that new startup model and how it works. And that's now what I've been working in for the last couple of years since.
Really? So you get the bug, you come back home, what do you do?
So I was actually about to begin my final year and in the September, I was approached by a guy in Belfast that was in my network and had seen what I had been up to in Paris working with startups and was building a startup himself and asked would I come on board his team. So I didn't even really think about it. I just said yes. I thought it sounded like a good opportunity. I jumped straight in. He was like, whoa, do you not want to think about it?
Woo!
Yeah, that was me. I was that girl. He was like, do you not want to think about it? And I was like, no, look, let's crack on. So alongside Dip, I was working for Enterprise SU. Enterprise SU are a free service based out of the Students' Union at Queen's, and their job is to support and help student startups and entrepreneurs. So I'm really lucky to still be in that job now, and I'm so lucky to be able to pass on some of my mistakes and my learnings onto these student entrepreneurs who are doing really incredible things. And they are so lucky to have a service like Enterprise SU that directs them to funding, to mentors, to networks, to really help get their startups off the ground. And they've seen some amazing success stories and incredible students that have come out and set up businesses that are helping people every day.
So a really funny like little piece of the origin story of the show is I showed up at like a pitch at Enterprise SU one day, and like one of the mentors, the business experts, a guy called Philip Bain, who we've had on the show since from Shredbank, he was like running this like pitching competition, and I think I went in and I like pitched and I maybe came third or something, and I won like £100. That £100 is literally how I started Best of Belfast.
Amazing. And we love stories like that. And that was actually one of the things I did with Dip. You know, I was doing Dip in my final year, but I was getting involved in all of the Enterprise SU programs. And I ended up leaving final year having secured like over $2,000 for Dip just by doing pitching competitions run by Enterprise SU. And it doesn't sound like a lot of money now, but see, for a student startup, that is amazing.
Dude, that £100, I tell you exactly where it went. It was a year annual subscription to Squarespace.
Class.
It was my website, and my website was the foundation for everything else.
See, we love stories like that, and look at us now.
Yeah, like that's crazy that you have had this opportunity to like help all these students start their businesses and like partner with people at the very start of their own journey while building your own thing, you know, and being involved in Dip. I guess, like, what did you do after that?
I worked alongside one of the other co-founders called Chloe. She was kind of there as a bit of a token influencer.
That's how you met?
It's how I met her. And she started taking me to her influencer kind of gigs and events around Belfast. And one day we were out for lunch, again, one of the influencer gigs. And I said to her, God, you know, is there no one managing you? And she said, no, there's loads of us influencers and content creators around Belfast, but there's nobody really specifically managing us. You know, there's influencer agencies in New York and Paris and Dublin and London even, but none really here. And I went, right, let's do it. And Valve Influence was born.
Unbelievable. Yeah, because like, especially at that time, like, it was a little bit of like a wild, wild west. And in some ways, I think a lot of people think the influencer world still kind of is. Like, I mean, there's the elephant in the room, I guess, is like, you know, and will forever be in conversations like Fyre Festival. You know, that whole idea where it's like people don't really know what this thing is. It's like really powerful and you can see it's having like these huge impacts. But like, how do you actually like harness that energy and that potential? And so to have somebody who can step in and take care of the influencers and protect them, but then also deliver value to business is a really interesting concept. Why Vava?
So the brief we gave to our logo designer was that we wanted something that was very much reflective of Chloe and myself being equal business partners, being about kind of us and how we reflect each other and complement each other. When we worked together in Dip, we realised how important it was to be at the forefront of a business and be the face of it, because people buy from people. And we found that that was really helpful to us when we were in Dip, was that people wanted to support the business because they wanted to support us.
Yeah.
And we realised how important that was that year. And so then when we went into Vava, we were like, you know, we want people to know this is us and we want to be the face of the business again. So we want the logo to reflect that it's me and you, that it's 50-50, that we're a partnership and that, you know, this logo is reflective of that. Yeah. So, we think you nailed the brief. We're happy with it.
Yeah, and then boom, just like that, Northern Ireland's first ever influencer agency was born?
Yeah, I mean, in Northern Ireland, there were people working with influencers. PR agencies and digital marketing agencies were running collaborations. However, nobody was doing it exclusively. So we wanted to set up an influencer agency that was dedicated to influencer marketing alone, which is what we have done.
So that's really interesting because, like you said, like up until this point, it's been like one of the things that the A agency offers versus someone coming in and being a specialist and being full-time and being laser-focused with it. And I guess, like, before we go any further, like, maybe a, like an interesting place just to start, even in terms of definition, is, like, in your own understanding of it, like, what actually is an influencer?
So influencers are people that have built a large and engaged audience on their social media profiles. So they might have started blogging or vlogging about family life or about fashion or about beauty. And through doing that and producing consistent content, they have built up an audience who are very engaged and who trust their opinion. Influencer marketing is when brands collaborate with these influential people to advertise or market their product or service.
Yeah, I mean, that checks out. Like, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, like, give me, like, a case study of how, like, the power of what an influencer can bring to a, if possible, even a bricks and mortar business, for example.
Yeah. Well, I mean, influencer marketing collaborations work best when a business and an influencer collaborates, when an influencer, you know, really uses and really loves the business or the product and produces consistent content, maybe using or promoting that product or service. So through these collaborations, really high quality content can be produced. The really engaged audience also buys into that brand and starts to understand and learn about the real benefits that come with using that product or service. And then really, I suppose, the influencers audience becomes that of the business as well.
Yeah. And I like what you said about the authenticity piece, because I think particularly young people and particularly the younger generation have such a good nose when it comes to sniffing out when someone's literally just doing a sponsor thing for the sake of the money versus like this is actually a product that this person is passionate about.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not something we would encourage. You know, it's, as you say, it's very obvious when it's not authentic, and the best sorts of collaborations come, as I say, when, you know, the influencer really does believe in the product or service that they're promoting, and we wouldn't encourage influencers to work with a brand that they don't like or they don't maybe already use. You know, we always leave a bit of scope for the influencer to try the brand or the product in question first before actually promoting it, which is so important. It sounds like a no-brainer, but it's actually not.
You
for
would
a
be
lot
surprised.
Of people. You would be surprised.
Yeah, 100%. So talk to me a wee bit about like the Northern Irish influencer scene. I'll not even say where I want to go with that. Like, set the scene for us, like, because, you know, if we think of influencers, the classic Northern Irish mentality is it's always elsewhere. It's, oh, it's in this city or it's in that other place. You know, it's in that other green field far away. Like, what is the scene like here? Is it big? Is it small? What sort of content creators are there in terms of like themes and niches? Just give us a wee bit of that.
Yeah, so there's so many talented content creators in Northern Ireland, and the quality of their content and the stuff they're doing is just getting better and better every day. It really is amazing. But I think sometimes when you mention influencers, some people roll their eyes and think it's, you know,
I'll say it, like, they have a very specific image that's usually the fashionista.
Yeah.
More so than, say, like, the mum with three kids that's documenting her life.
That's a good way of putting it. And as you say, there are mummy bloggers, there are food and drink bloggers, there are home and interiors bloggers, there are educational activists. There's people doing amazing things, not only to promote products and services, but to educate and to inspire and to empower. And that's really amazing. You know, you are so influenced by the content that you consume online, whether that comes from influencers or not. So it's important that you follow, you know, good people that are producing stuff you actually care about. And it's not just about, you know, buying the latest fast fashion. It's about, you know, learning. I mean, the stuff I've even learned from the mommy bloggers that I follow, and I'm not even a parent, but I'm like, that could come in useful someday.
I never thought of packing my lunch like that. You've saved me 10 minutes a day.
Yeah, and like, you know, recipes from the amazing like food content creators, and you know, even that the places I socialise in and the bars I go to and the local businesses I support, so many of those recommendations come from influencers. And you know, influencer is a sort of, I suppose some people think it's a bit of a dirty word or they don't like using that word, but even content creators and bloggers, you know, they are doing some amazing things in Belfast, and it is a really big and engaged community that support each other, that support local businesses, and one that should really be celebrated.
Yeah, and I like that you, like, because there is, the community exists, because it's like you start to recognise the faces at the events and at the openings and at the launches of like new restaurants and things like that. And it's nice that in some ways you also have become a little bit of a focal point in that community, and you have helped bring those people together even more and connect them, because it can be very isolating in that world and in that space.
Yeah, I mean, we try to, and obviously it's been hard over the last couple of years, the pandemic, not being able to run events, but you can tell that,
I know,
but you can tell that when the bloggers come together and are able to socialise with each other, they really love it because they really do understand what each one's trying to do.
Yeah, and swap notes and tips and war stories.
Totally, and it's so funny how they nearly become like starstruck with each other too. They're like, wow, I've only ever met you online.
I've been following
you for years. Yeah, yeah. But you know, it's networking for them too.
Yeah.
You know, just in their industry. So it's great.
That's cool. A question I have about kind of like the landscape of like the local landscape of influencers, like for the actual influencers themselves, a question I've had like specifically with our Northern Irish people is maybe like the challenge of being in such a small place and the challenges that can bring in building a large enough audience to basically help them make enough money from doing their passion full time. Because a lot of influencers I know locally, I don't know what the correct term is, you could probably tell me, is it like a micro influencer or something? You know, it's like maybe like 10,000 or 20,000, that's kind of their audience size, but they put their lives into it, versus someone, let's say, who is in the likes of like a New York City that has a much broader natural audience to draw from. Do you think that there's a unique challenge that Northern Irish influencers face because of the sheer size of this place? The glass ceiling, as it were, in terms of audience size?
Yeah, I suppose it's a really good point. What we have to remember is that they present a unique opportunity to reach a Northern Irish or an Irish audience.
Totally. And that's the value for the businesses.
Exactly. So even if you're a business maybe in England that wants to tap into the Irish or Northern Irish market, you know that you can go to those people. So in terms of a cap, in terms of money, yes, I suppose. But again, it kind of depends on the sort of content you're putting out there too. It might be very niche and very directed in Northern Irish audience.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of social media and of the internet, is that, you know, content travels and it can be consumed anywhere. So if their content is tailored to appeal to different audiences, then really the sky's your limit in terms of who you reach out to and who you engage with. It doesn't have to be local online.
Absolutely. So you have started in Northern Irish context. Do you plan then on kind of becoming this international agency that just has a Northern Irish accent, if that makes sense?
Well, we work quite often down south and in mainland UK as well. It's an interesting one, and it's something that we've thought about quite a lot. But I suppose, as I mentioned just previously, what's great about working with local influencers, and when I say local, I sort of mean across the UK and Ireland as well, is that businesses internationally can use our influencers to tap into our markets.
Mm.
So we can be international in that sense.
That's very cool, yeah.
Now,
I never thought of it from that perspective. That's very cool. If I'm like a startup in Canada that wants to get into Northern Ireland, my door is a Northern Irish influencer.
Exactly. Wow. So it nearly pays us and helps us to hold on to that local network and that local knowledge, and really help our influencers to be elevated on connecting with international brands without necessarily having to be an international brand ourselves.
Yeah, that's so good. And I mean, like, talk to me a little bit about, like, because Northern Ireland is very attractive for businesses to get into, because I think for a lot of people it's used as a bit of a test market for the UK as a whole or for the island as a whole. And that's really interesting. Like, you guys are right there in the crosshair of that, like, opportunity.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we've even had Irish brands that want to get into the UK market that have come to Northern Ireland first because it's, you know, more accessible, it's more local, and it's nearly like a stepping stone.
And it's small. You can test and see very clearly if something works.
Exactly. It's, and it's kind of the same the other way around too. You know, UK brands that want to get into Ireland, they kind of can use us as a stepping stone as well, which, so it's, as you say, it is advantageous to be here.
So good. So I'll not ask you for your favourite because that's impossible and would potentially get you into trouble. But, like, again, we'll put it like this. Give a few examples of, like, campaigns that you guys have managed that have been a really success, like, really big success for you. Like, what are the things you're really proud of so far in the agency's history?
I suppose when we're able to secure our influencers well-paid, meaningful work that they enjoy, that's a success story for us. On one side, on the business side, when a business sees really clear and, you know, profitable results, again, that's the other side of the success story. So when the two marry up, then for us, that's the dream.
Do you have, like, kind of metrics or deliverables that you work to with a client? Because, again, I think maybe one of the hesitations that people would have about getting into influencer marketing is there's this kind of idea. It's like, oh, I'll chuck like 10 grand into the air and, like, I don't know what's going to happen. How do you kind of address that concern if I'm coming to you with my, like, you know, my ice cream shop and I'm like, help me, like, help me justify this to my manager? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the business. You know, you could have an e-commerce site that wants to get loads of people swiping through to the website. You can have a new cafe that just wants people to know about them. You can have an international brand that just wants to boost their brand awareness.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the business's objectives. And that's what we really have to understand very clearly at the start before we put together any strategy. Because what we do is entirely based on what the business wants to grow out of it.
Cool. You're ready for a really, really hard pivot? Like, talk to me about the quote, I want to be a radiator rather than a drain.
So this is always something my mum has told.
Is it a family thing? I had a feeling it was maybe a family thing.
Yeah, it's something my mum really has pushed myself, my brother and sister all my life. She always encourages us to be a radiator and not a drain. And I suppose that what she really means by that is when you're around people, around one person or a group, always try and be positive and enthusiastic and bright as opposed to someone who complains and drains the energy out of other people. So she always says to radiate positive energy and don't drain positive energy. So I really try to do that every day and around anyone I'm with, I suppose.
That's so cool.
Try to live by it.
Literally while you were speaking, I realized why I asked that question, because it literally just came into my head. It's because I was so impressed that the first thing that you said was you wanted to make it a success for the influencers. Because I think there's been some abuse of influencers over the years everywhere around the world where it's more of like, what can we get from this person? It's very kind of like sucky, if you know what I mean. It's like, let's extract as much value as possible out of this person and their platform versus like, how can we make this a win-win? And I think like that win-win relationship is so valuable, particularly because it can lead to really interesting long-term partnerships.
Totally. And I think that's why Chloe and I are such a good team as well, because she came from the influencer side and I came from the business side. Wow. So I came in and I was thinking, okay, great, what can businesses derive from these relationships? And Chloe was coming in thinking, how can I get these influencers the best work?
Yeah.
So those two goals, I suppose, really married together, and now she looks out for their best interest and I look out for the business best interest, and together we look out for each other's.
Cool. A little bit of a like call to action then, maybe for people listening, like, who are you looking for in terms of influencers? Like, is there like a number, an audience size that people need to have? Is there any niches that you're particularly interested in? Like, if someone's listening who has a great platform, has an audience that they're really passionate about, there may be the question running through their head is, oh, like, is this for me? And why would I do this? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I suppose without even thinking about the brand work side of things, you need to do it because you love it, you enjoy it, you like connecting with your audience. And it's something that you do for fun. You know, when you start to hate it or it starts to become a really big chore for you, it's probably, you know, not going to work because, as you say, it's very easy to smell out the inauthenticity.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, do it because you enjoy it. And if you want to collaborate with brands that will come, just focus on remaining consistent and authentic and connecting with your audience, and do it for fun first.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, we will switch gears then and kind of move into the final section, as it were. Some stock questions that we always ask kind of the people we have the chance to speak to. This is probably more personal, but if you want to keep it business, that's also fine. Most challenging moment so far, and if you don't mind sharing, how are we able to overcome it?
Of my life? Interesting. To be honest, Paris in general was a really challenging year, and there were some really difficult times in that year. And I suppose what I kind of live by and what I keep reminding myself, as kind of dreary as it sounds, but you just have to keep plodding on, even if it's really hard, even if you're actually just putting one foot in front of the other, not doing anything spectacular. But if you just keep plodding along, like, you will get there. Mm-hmm. I think about that in terms of the business as well. Even on the hard days, just make it through the day, keep plodding on. You will be okay as long as you don't give up, you know. And I always remind myself of that. So I suppose getting through that year was particularly challenging. A-levels were really difficult time of my life, just because I was so determined to get the results that I wanted. So that was kind of, I was, what do you call that?
Like tunnel vision or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But then so rewarding when I did get those grades too. I'm trying to think. I mean, often, and I think this kind of comes in line with trying to remain positive, is that when something challenging has happened, I try to learn from it and move on and not think about it again. You know, I respect the fact that that has helped me and it has made me into the person I am today and shaped it. But I like being able to then put it past me and move on. I actually wrote for Ireland when I was a teenager. And again, like the A-level results, that was tunnel vision and really working so hard. And that was challenging, but again, so, so rewarding when I made the team.
Yeah.
And it was so, so worth it. I suppose the worst challenges that you come up against, but when there are kind of a lack of positives to take or a lack of learnings, I find those particularly challenging to get past.
Yeah. It's like that, like, yeah, I just have to accept that this was just a really terrible thing.
Yeah, a really unfortunate situation that happened.
And sometimes there's no meaning to it, and you want to find the meaning and how you can, like, use it in a TED Talk someday, and sometimes you just don't get it, you know?
That could be a TED Talk in itself.
Whoa, bro! It's like we've cracked the code.
How to overcome those times where things are just really crap and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yes, there's been a couple of times in my life where I found myself up against those situations. I'd say those have been pretty hard to get through.
Yeah, tough. Flip side of the coin then, like, most successful moment, thing you're most proud of, something like that?
When I made it on to that junior 18 Ireland squad was one of the proudest moments of my life. Getting my 3 A's at A-levels, one of the proudest moments of my life. I suppose...
Did you have to work for it?
Oh my goodness, the hardest I ever have.
Does it come naturally to you, or did you have to really slog?
No, really, really slog. So there's some people, do you know those really annoying ones at school that literally didn't study and ended up coming out with those really top grades?
Yeah.
I was never one of those people. It's smart, I suppose, but I always had to really work hard. Again, with the rowing, I was never the tallest, never the strongest, never the most naturally talented. But I remember saying to myself, if I never miss a session, I will make it. You know, I might not be the most talented here. I might not be the tallest or the strongest, but I'm going to be the most dedicated.
Wow. I had a guy in here a few years ago and he said, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was kind of my mindset. I was like, if I just don't give up on this and I just do the best I can and keep showing up, I'm going to make it. And it's the same in business as well, I think. So I suppose I can't even remember the question now, but...
It's the nature of the show, you know. Here's another one then. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland out for a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or a pint, dead or alive, who would you take? Where would you take them and why?
That's a really good question. Do you know, I've always been really inspired by really successful females in business. Mm-hmm. They're the people I look up to and I'm inspired by. There's one woman I look towards quite often. I've heard her speak a couple of times. Tina McKenzie.
Yes.
She's the head of Staffline Recruitment, and she has no idea who I am. But I think she's incredible, and I think what she's doing in Northern Ireland is amazing. Who else do I think is really interesting? Well, where would I take her? Where would I take Tina McKenzie? She's going to listen to this and cringe. I would just go sit and have a glass of wine somewhere, I think.
Nice. Are you red or white?
Red.
Nice.
Who else? God, there's... Do you know what? And your podcast is actually a testimony to this. If you scroll down the guests that you've had on this show, Northern Ireland is full of such amazing, inspirational, hardworking people. And, you know, I actually have such a selection when it comes to people I would love to take out.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to think of them off the top of my head.
Sure. I love the Tina answer. That's a lovely answer.
Yeah. I just think she's done so amazingly for herself. Yeah, it's something I'll be thinking about now that you've asked.
You'll be like driving home and you'll not have like one person. You'll have a whole squad that you go out with. It's like the ultimate team of like
the ultimate team,
Tina
I know.
Plus five. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I actually feel like I'm really, really lucky. A lot of the people that I've looked up to in Northern Ireland I actually have been able to meet and have been able to talk to. But that's I feel cool. like everybody I talk to, whether really successful or not, you do learn things from conversations with people all the time.
The students that you work with, you must learn so much just from totally. Being exposed to all that, even just all the ideas. You know?
Totally. But, do you know, even the people that you don't... I just feel like there's inspiration to draw from everybody
yeah.
without even really expecting it. I remember so I did some work with EventSec when I was in university.
Brilliant.
And I remember working on a shift with this guy and just, you know, normal guy, normal job. And there were other people on location that day. And one of them was Polish. And this guy from Belfast that I was working with stood and chatted away to this guy in Polish. I went, right, how do you know Polish? And he goes, I know a bit of Polish, I know a bit of Swedish. And he could say, hello, how are you, and have really basic conversation in about 10 languages.
My
and he
goodness.
Just said, because people feel so special when you're able to just even just greet them in another language. And he had made an effort
Dude.
To learn these little pieces of conversation in all of these different languages just so he could make someone feel special for 5 minutes. And I was so inspired by that. I just thought, you are so amazing.
That is legendary status.
So you can say that, you know, I really want to speak to them because they're really successful really want to speak to them because they've done amazing things. But they're usually quite high profile people. You can actually be so inspired by the most normal people in everyday life all the time.
Mm. Yeah, the real like ability to learn something is really like it's your own ears rather than even what the other person can necessarily offer you. That's a very interesting point. Cool. Where now? I think we are on to the last one. And it's the place I usually like to end. And it's very simply this. If you could go back in time to an 18-year-old Fran and you had a couple of minutes of her time, what would you say to her?
God, that's such an interesting one. So I have always wanted to go and do like a lot of travelling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something... I am lucky to be well-travelled, but I haven't actually gone off with a backpack yet, which is something I've always wanted to do. But I got into business. And it's funny, I think people don't do the travelling thing because, you know, they get into relationships or, you know, different things keep them at home. And that's actually something that has kept me at home. And while I'm so lucky to have had my experiences in business and I've made the network I have, I feel like I would nearly just tell myself to just slow down a bit and just chill.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself that year. My sister, after school, she didn't get into the university she wanted to and was able to go and take a year out and was in Australia and was in a load of different places. I'm really jealous of that experience she had.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like my mum is always saying to me, just calm down. I'm always in such a rush.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I was 18 again, I would say, you know, don't jump into this, don't jump into this. Just if you really want to go and travel now, just do it. And it's still something I really hope I'm going to be able to do. And I will. I know I will. But yeah, I feel like I would just say to don't jump into things and commit yourself to things that might keep you here for now.
Yeah.
Wait, there will be time.
Yeah, that's quality. I think like it. What is in your favor is the nature of, I'm going to say, our work. And I know that you have a lot of in-person events that you are kind of would have to be there for. The world has changed slightly or has accelerated because of COVID, where, you know, the idea of you being able to work remotely and manage a lot of your business from anywhere is now much more possible than ever before, which is totally very exciting.
Very exciting. And it's funny because this is another way, as you say, that business has changed. I feel like 20 years ago, a real milestone of business would have been to get your first office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whereas now nobody wants one.
Exactly, exactly. And I remember talking to accountants and stuff and they were saying, okay, well, maybe, you know, next year you'll be looking at office space and stuff and factor that into your budget. And I was like, no.
I know.
No way. Yeah. Like, really, we want to be able to be working from Bali.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be tied down to an office. We want to be able to take our laptop and work from anywhere. Again, another thing I've said in this podcast, it makes me sound so typically millennial. But yes.
You got to embrace who we are, you know. It's the aim of the game.
So that's the case.
I'll give you a bonus question. This is a question, and the forewarning is that we often cut this because it just is a train wreck and doesn't go anywhere sometimes. The odd time, something magical will happen. So there's your caveat. I love asking people, and feel free to take this question out in the wild, you know, with your mates in the pub or wherever, your family. I love asking people, what's the kindest thing that somebody has ever done for you?
Oh, do you know, it's actually made me a bit emotional because it happened really recently. So, as I say, my sister had taken that year out to go and travel, but she also worked a lot in our family business. And she was one of the really unfortunate people that her placement year fell over the pandemic.
No.
And she was meant to be in Dublin with KPMG having the most amazing time.
Sure.
But instead, she was at home in Port Stewart with my parents. But the benefit of that was that she squirreled away loads and loads of money. Because she wasn't having to spend it on rent or in this amazing Dublin life. It's obviously,
super
Dublin's really expensive.
Oh my word.
So she saved loads of money. And I went through a bit of a hard time recently and I just wanted to get away. I was like, do you know what? I actually just want to go now and travel or move somewhere and just take my laptop with me and go.
Yeah.
And my sister was like, well, sure, why don't you? And I was like, I feel like I don't have enough money squirreled away. And she goes, well, you know, how much do you need? And I was like, I'd really love, you know, this figure to be able to go and do it properly. Yeah. And she was like, well, I have this. And it was the entirety of what she had saved.
No.
And she's my little sister. It was her entire savings. She offered me to go off and travel when I was going through this really hard time.
Wow.
And I'm nearly crying even now thinking about it because I just was so shocked at the time that my little sister had literally just offered me her entire life savings. So that is the kindest thing that someone has ever done for me. Obviously, I didn't take it and I would never take it, but that was pretty special.
I'm very, very glad we asked. That is awesome. Francesca, this has been absolutely lovely. Really, really wonderful to hear your story. And I really appreciate you giving up the time. And more importantly, for sharing everything you did. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And thank you.